case, which is case number 63871, Kelly Barrett et al. Versus District Court. The real party in interest is Upener Inc., if I pronounce that correct. Upener Inc., okay. We have Mr. Maddox on behalf of the petitioners, Mr. Brown and Mr. Rasmussen on behalf of the real parties in interest then. Okay, Mr. Maddox, you may proceed. Would you like to reserve any time in rebuttal?
Yes, Chief Justice Gibbons, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. You may do so. You may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice Gibbons, Justices of the Supreme Court, Bob Maddox on behalf of the petitioners. May it please the Court. No one here disputes that petitioners herein, homeowners within the Tropical Breeze subdivision in North Las Vegas, Nevada, fully and completely complied with the pre-litigation requirements of Chapter 40. No one here disputes that in 2009, petitioners gave notice to the developer of their homes, Centex Homes, a proper notice under NRS 40.645 of the defects in the water delivery system in their homes. And no one here disputes that Centex, in turn, gave proper notice to its subcontractor, RCR Plumbing, and its supplier, Upenor, of the same defects in the water delivery system. And most importantly, no one here disputes, not even Upenor, that in response to that notice from Centex Homes, Upenor refused to perform any repairs in 2009. Upenor wrote in their response, "Please be advised that Upenor declines to undertake repairs related to the claimed condition of the plumbing system in the residences referenced above." And yet, we fast forward to 2013, the district court on the eve of trial stayed the entire case in order to allow Upenor another opportunity to perform whatever repair Upenor might choose to perform to these homes. In spite of that denial, initially, Upenor was brought into this litigation not by Centex Homes, but by RCR Plumbing, the plumbing subcontractor. Upenor moved to dismiss the complaint of RCR Plumbing on the basis that RCR had not given notice to Upenor, even though Centex had given notice to Upenor. And the district court agreed, apparently believing that the party suing had to be the party who gave the notice. It didn't matter that Centex had actually given the notice. In 2009, Centex had given notice to both RCR and Upenor. Petitioners herein settled with Centex Homes in 2011, moved to amend the complaint to allege a direct claim against RCR and Upenor, as well as to allege the assigned claim from Centex. That motion was granted. The second amended complaint was filed. When Upenor moved to dismiss the RCR complaint, and the district court had said that the entire case was going to be stayed, petitioners requested that petitioners be allowed to proceed on the basis of the notice that Centex Homes had given to RCR and Upenor, but the district court refused to consider that. The district court's order of August 2, 2013, if allowed to stand, would upset the legislature's carefully crafted program of mandated pre-litigation notices and responses within defined time limits. If allowed to stand, the order would constitute legislation by the judiciary. It would create a right of repair by a third-party defendant who had previously rejected that opportunity to perform a repair to the plumbing system in the Tropical Breeze home simply on the basis that the party suing Upenor was not the party who had given notice to Upenor. In their brief, Upenor claims that NRS 40.690 subparagraph 2 requires that the party who sues be the party who had previously given notice. That's what they say. That subsection reads, a contractor or claimant may require a party against whom the contractor or claimant asserts a claim governed by NRS 40.600 to 40.695 inclusive to appear and participate in proceedings held pursuant to those sections as if the party were a contractor and the party requiring the appearance were a claimant. The party must receive notice of the proceedings from the contractor or claimant. Upenor reads way too much into that section. It is important to consider the legislative history of Chapter 40 and how this section 40.690 subparagraph 2 fits in. Chapter 40 came into being as a result of the passage of SB 395 in 1995. At that time, the entire legislature was ecstatic about this wonderful program whereby a homeowner would have to give notice to the builder, and there'd have to be of a defect, and there'd have to be a mediation before a lawsuit was filed. There was no right to repair at that time. Everything was to be negotiated, mediation before litigation. The problem with the original statute was that for the developer was that the developer couldn't compel the subcontractors or suppliers to participate in the mediation. So it wasn't working very well. Because if they couldn't require the people who were responsible for creating the defect to come in and participate in mediation, things weren't going to happen. So in 1997, this section was enacted. And all it says is that the contractor or the claimant can require somebody else, a subcontractor or supplier, to participate in mediation. That's all it's there for. It was amended slightly in 1999. During that time, there still was no right to repair. The right to repair provisions were first enacted in 2003. And at that time, the legislature adopted a comprehensive program of requirements for notice, specific deadlines for the contractor to pass that notice along to subcontractors and others who might be responsible for getting a response, for conducting inspections, and for agreeing to perform repairs. NRS 40.690 subparagraph 2 was simply left in place. It needs to be read to be, in a manner to be consistent with the notice provisions that were enacted in 2003, the 40.645 and 40.645 and 646 and 647. It's clear from the statute that it makes no difference who gave notice to a subcontractor or supplier. If the subcontractor had been given notice and had been given an opportunity to repair and refused to repair, anybody who had participated up until that time had the right to go after that person who refused to repair. That section is 40.6472, subparagraph 4. That reads, if the contractor, subcontractor, supplier, or design professional has elected not to repair the construction defect, the claimant or contractor may bring a cause of action for the constructional defect or amended complaint to add a cause of action for the constructional defect. In other words, all that mattered was that the subcontractor or supplier chose not to repair. Refusal to repair is refusal to repair. When Upenor refused to repair in 2009, that was the end of their opportunity to impose a repair of their choosing on these homeowners.
Mr. Maddox, you've been in this since the beginning.
Yes, Your Honor.
Started. Has this issue ever been raised before the Supreme Court that you know of?
I do not believe it has, Your Honor.
Okay. I mean, that's one reason we were interested in the en banc arguments to take a look at it and see. My other concern is the procedural posture here, that, you know, when this request is made before Judge Earl, you know, these cases a lot of times move at glacial speed anyway with the various components here in them. So this was later in the case when this request was made then.
It was very late in the case on the eve of trial that this motion to dismiss was heard by the district court, and the district court decided that since the notice that RCR hadn't given notice to Uponor, therefore RCR had now to give notice to Uponor. But the district court was disregarding the fact that the plaintiffs, the petitioners here, had an amended complaint on file and should have had the right to proceed with our direct cause of action and our assigned claim from Centex. May I reserve the time?
You may do so.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, are you and Mr. Rasmussen going to divide your time up? Okay, what's your time allocations between the two of you?
So Justice Gibbons, 7.5 for Uponor.
Okay, very well. Can we do halves, Tracy? Okay. Can we do maybe an 8 and 7? Is that okay? Because just the way we time them here.
I'll take the 8.
We'll give you 8. Mr. Rasmussen doesn't mind. We'll get 7 then. So you may proceed then.
May it please the Court, Peter Brown on behalf of the respondent, Uponor, Inc. Since 2003, when the statute was amended, there has been one bedrock that Chapter 40 defendants can rely upon. That is the security and the knowledge that if they're going to be brought into a case, if someone is going to commence a claim against them, prior to that commencement of a claim, there will be notice and there will be an opportunity to repair. The position put forth by the petitioners, seeking to have the lower court's ruling overturned, if this court goes along with the petitioner's decision, Uponor believes that what will be created is a secondary class of Chapter 40 defendants. Because what you will have under the statutory scheme is the petitioners, the plaintiffs in a Chapter 40 case. They are required to give notice to a developer general contractor. That developer general contractor is required to give notice to subcontractors. That is required by the statute. But under the interpretation put forth by the petitioners, what you would then have is a subset of Chapter 40 defendants who would not get notice. And who are those subsets? It's not the direct subcontractor, design professional, or supplier of that developer. So in this particular instance, RCR Plumbing, as an example, if RCR Plumbing subcontracts out its work to another subcontractor, says, WWW Plumbing, I want you to do the faucets. Under the petitioner's theory and under RCR's theory, that particular subcontractor would not have to get notice. They could be sued directly. Same thing for my client. My client is not a direct supplier of the developer in this particular case. And so, again, you'd have a second set. And this court, in the ANSI decision, rejected just that type of argument. In the ANSI case, what was proposed by the defendants in that case was there to be a secondary class of homeowners, the subsequent purchasers. And the argument in that case is they didn't purchase a new residence, so they should not be allowed to benefit from Chapter 40. And this court rejected that particular argument because this court said it would be disparate treatment. And that is what Uponor has faced in this particular case. There's a lot of discussion about the timing. Let me talk about that. In 2009, when my client received Chapter 40 notice, the petitioners say Uponor had its chance to accept that notice and to do an offer to repair. Petitioners also say that what Uponor has received is a second bite at the apple. But they're two different apples. Uponor, from the beginning of the litigation in Nevada dealing with claims pertaining to its plumbing system and its fittings, has uniformly, in every single case, said Chapter 40 does not apply. What was read to you was a portion of my client's response to the Chapter 40 notice. Further on in that response, it specifically says, Uponor did not serve as a subcontractor in connection with the above reference residence. Furthermore, Uponor does not believe that it qualifies as a supplier for purposes of NRS 40.646. given the definition of supplier as set forth in NRS 40.634. Consequently, Upenor does not believe that Chapter 40 is applicable to it for purposes of your correspondence and pursuant to NRS 40.646. Upenor has done that consistently in every single case. Why? Because Upenor was never going to acknowledge or accept or agree that Chapter 40 applied to it, because Upenor has fought the determination that Upenor is a supplier. And it was not until July 8th of 2013, after Upenor has been embroiled in litigation in numerous cases, including a federal class action that pertains to potentially 100 to 150,000 homes, Upenor has never said that it is a supplier. On July 8th, 2013, Judge Alan Earle made the determination. He said it was a very close determination that my client was a supplier. At that point, my client gained the obligations and the rights under Chapter 40. But back in 2009, that apple that was offered, it was a poison apple. If my client had accepted that and said, okay, got Chapter 40, we're going to do a right to repair, we would be acknowledging for all time that my client was a supplier, and we disagreed with that.
Now, when you chose to exercise a right of repair and bite the poison apple in July of 2013, rather than proceed with your legal position and carry it forward to an appeal later and stop the whole process. Mr. Brown, that is a stretch. Well, that is really a stretch.
Well, Justice, at that point in time, it wasn't that Upenor chose to bite it.
You exercised a right of repair.
We exercised a right of repair because at that point in time, that's when Chapter 40 applied. Prior to that date, no court had ever ruled that Chapter 40 applied to my client. And
so instead of contesting that question, whether by writ or letting the matter go to trial and challenging it on appeal, you exercise a right of repair? That seems a bit inconsistent with this defining moment legal position that you advocate for several years before.
Well, at that point in time, and part of this, I would wager, part of what the concern is because of the timing. And I want to talk about the timing because from 2009 to the date in 2013, two cases were consolidated. There were attempts to disqualify both judges that served in that particular case. There were months and months of disqualification proceedings whereby the petitioner sought to disqualify Judge Alan Earle. It was only after that got clarified and when it was determined that the motion to disqualify Judge Earle was not warranted, that finally we had that particular ruling. And what Judge Earle said at that point in time is he said that the November trial date was still going to be fine. If Upenor chose to make an election, then there still could be, one, repairs, and two, trial of the remaining issues in this case, which included petitioner's claims for fees, costs, and interest. Justice, I've argued this in numerous cases in which a party can deny or can choose not to make a repair time and time and time again. It doesn't preclude that party from making a repair when the case is appropriate. And in fact, this court noted that in the D.R. Horton case, where it noted we recognize that there are instances when it may be within the contractor's best interest to opt not to repair. It was in Upenor's best interest not to opt to repair in 2009 because no one had said that Upenor was subject to Chapter 40. But at the time when it was made to us, the option was, you now have Chapter 40. It applies to your client. At that point in time, my client has the option to make the repair because RCR had given us that notice.
Where in Chapter 40 is RCR compelled to provide you with a Chapter 40 notice as a condition precedent to the prosecution of an indemnity claim?
We gave two pathways to Judge Earle. One was 40.690, where when you look at it, if a party wants to bring another party in, then the party that brings seeking to bring that party in gives notice, and the statute specifically says that party can act as a claimant, and the party being brought in is designated as a contractor. That was one pathway, which would take you down 40.645 if you said specifically now RCR was the claimant and my client was the contractor. The second, which is what Judge Earle did rely on.
Well, before you go to the second, isn't the first a bit problematic when subparagraph B of 645.1 is discretionary as opposed to mandatory? It uses the word may as opposed to must.
And that's why there was the second pathway. But we gave two pathways to Judge Earle and said this is one pathway.
So the first pathway you would acknowledge is a bit problematic because of the discretionary nature of 645B1B.
We used it for the purpose of giving another pathway, and in fact when we received notice from RCR, RCR relied both on 40.645 and 40.646. 40.646 is what the petitioners note in their moving papers that they believe Judge Earle relied on because he was focused on the word shall. And how do you get there? If you look at the definition of subcontractor, the definition of subcontractor specifically says that it includes the definition, and this is under 40.632, the definition of subcontractor says a subcontractor is a contractor that does work for another contractor. You have already the definition of contractor, which is one that develops, constructs, revises, does landscaping, and in that definition, it says or. And so that a contractor doesn't have to do all of those, it encompasses the subcontractor. When you have the subcontractor, then you move to NRS 40.646, which is what Judge Earle relied on. And in that particular provision, it says that the contractor must. So you do have the imperative under NRS 40.646.
Mr. Brown, I'm going to have to cut you off here. It's 4:14. It's unfair to Mr. Rasmus. I'm going to give him his 7 minutes that we promised him, and then we'll give Mr. Maddox an extra 2 minutes in his rebuttal to balance that out.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Rasmussen. Mm-hmm.
May it please the Court, Justices, my name is Scott Rasmussen. I represent RCR Plumbing in this matter. I want to make sure that some of the dates are a little bit more known, as I understand it, from being the original attorney on the case defending RCR in this matter. On January 22, 2008, plaintiffs issued a Chapter 40 notice to Centex. Centex issued that notice to RCR. We received another notice on August 5th, 2009. Plaintiffs issued another Chapter 40 notice to Centex, and in this one, they alleged for the first time corroded shutoff valves. On September 29th, 2010, and we are already parties in the case, plaintiffs issued a Chapter 40 regarding yellow brass to Real Homes, which is one of the other developers in this matter, with an affidavit from their expert, Dr. David Coates, which is the first time that we're hearing about yellow brass. It is at that same month that we sue Uponor. Now, at that time, I do not know whether or not Chapter 40 applies to Uponor. I'm a subcontractor. I don't know that they're a supplier under the statute. But I do know that maybe I can get some contribution from them with regard to this case. One of the things I think we've at least thought about is that any party that comes into a Chapter 40 case is already a Chapter 40 defendant. I don't know that that's actually been decided. Is every party in a case automatically a Chapter 40? Or can they be a party but not subject to the entitlements, as we sometimes describe them, of NRS 40.655? What I knew is that at that time, they now have these allegations about yellow brass, and I need to get Uponor into the case because it's their product. My belief is they're the manufacturer or some way of being the manufacturer because it's their name that comes on the box of the fittings that my client purchases down at Home Depot that gets put into houses in Las Vegas. That's all that I know at this point. Whether or not Chapter 4 is going to apply to them, I don't know yet. But I do know three ways in which I'm not sure that I should be the one that should be compelled to know back in 2009 when I get brought into the case for the first time that they are a Chapter 40 person and I needed to give them notice. First of all, we've already discussed, and the plaintiffs have said it, and I'm going to agree that I'm a subcontractor. It's discretionary. I don't have to give Chapter 40 notice to anyone. It's not written in the statute anywhere. It's not in NRS 46.5. It's not in NRS 46.6. I am specifically defined in NRS 46.32 as a subcontractor. And as a subcontractor, I have no compulsion to give Chapter 40 notice. That is a problem in the scheme of things. If they're going to be a Chapter 40 defendant, as Mr. Brown just argued, then it would be compelled on my part to make sure that I have something in the statute that requires me to give to them so they do have their Chapter 40 rights. I understand that. When I brought it to Judge Earl's attention, he says, this statute doesn't say subcontractor. He says, you're right, it doesn't. But I believe everyone is going to be brought into a Chapter 40 case, whether they're Chapter 40 or not. Once they're in, and I've ruled that they are now, they should have their Chapter 40 rights to repair. The very first plank of what should happen. If you're going to give entitlements, we balance that by saying you have the right to repair so that you don't have to deal with these entitlements later on. And so even in 2013, after honestly what was 3 years of just deciding who was going to be the district court judge handling this case, and really wasn't a lot of discovery, things like that, that's when we got to the point where we need to give them their Chapter 40 rights, if we say they are. But I don't know that when I do there. Number two, I don't know that they're a supplier under Chapter 40. My supplier was who? Home Depot, Ferguson, Bob's supply company, whoever it was that gave me these yellow brass fittings. That's who my supplier is locally in Nevada. My thought on Chapter 40 has always been the local suppliers are the ones that know what's best to put in Las Vegas. As far as I understand it, Uponor is a company in Apple Valley, Minnesota. I don't know how they're related to know what the conditions are in Las Vegas as far as using their product. Is the supplier someone local, or is it every portion of every part that we put into a house? Because what's going to happen next is the other reason, the third reason why I can't be held, and that is Chapter 40 itself. Does it even apply in a product defect case, or are we talking constructional defect cases? Because if it's product defect cases, then we've opened up a whole new can of worms in a lot of ways. Let me explain what I'll have to start doing. I'm going to have to go down to Home Depot and each one of them get my own indemnification agreement and an additional insured endorsement so that I'm protected as a subcontractor from the products that are being used. And what that's going to lead to is not necessarily the best construction products being used to build Nevada homes. It won't be the best products. It'll be whatever product I can find that will be insured and be indemnified so that I can put it into Nevada homes. Because if I'm not protected, then I get to go out of business. You see how this is kind of a little bit different spot to be in, and a very difficult spot, I think, for subcontractors to be placed in when it's not there. We have to make sure that there is balance for all parties, not only the contractors, but also the subcontractors. And if we believe that they are a supplier under Chapter 40, even though they're not locally there, then we need to know that.
So how do you suggest we interpret Chapter 40 based upon this conundrum that you're in and maybe other Mr. Maddox and everybody else? What should be our view of that?
Have to look at the very first part of this case, and that is, did I get a specific notice that told me that yellow brass was going to be in this case, and was that given to me before the lawsuit was started? You've already addressed that in a couple of cases. So I think that's the first spot that you look to. And the second one you really have to decide is, are we going to allow this area of law to come into this, or do we need to make sure that it's separated so that the warranty provisions and other areas of law that handle product defect are really going to be what Nevada does? If we're going to be bringing in suppliers from all across the country and internationally for that matter, are they really the right parties to be handling these sort of defenses for what could be happening for specific conditions here in Nevada and its environment? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. Mr. Maddox.
Thank you, Chief Justice. The Chapter 40 notices in 2009 were very clear and specific. They're part of the record. I'm sorry I don't have the citation to give to you right now. They've been cited in the brief. They're part of the record. They were very specific about the corrosion, de-zincification corrosion that was taking place. That was alleged in the petitioner's notices, two of them in 2009. Sentex was put on notice of that. That's why Sentex passed along that notice to both RCR and to Uponor. It was clear to them Uponor was the entity that had created the product and had caused that product to be put into the marketplace, and RCR had picked it up and had used it. So,
Mr. Maddox, is there anything in Chapter 40 that would have required Sentex to give notice to Uponor?
No, Chief Justice Hardesty, it wouldn't have required them to. If they did, that would have given Uponor a right to repair.
Why does that follow? If no notice is required, why is the supplier entitled to a right of repair?
If the
notice is not compelled, why does it invoke a right of repair when the notice isn't compelled by the statute?
The right to repair is an opportunity to perform a repair rather than an obligation on the part of Uponor. Uponor was given that opportunity to perform a repair, and the purpose of the right to repair is to...
If I'm a party who is not subject to Chapter 40 or is not a party to whom a notice is required to be given, why do I have a right of repair? If I'm a manufacturer in India of some product that gets incorporated in a home, and the court interprets the statute that says that I'm not entitled to a Chapter 40 notice, why can I now later exercise a right of repair in a chapter that doesn't really apply to me?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, Justice Hardesty, I think you and I perhaps misunderstood. Let me try to back up a little bit. If Sentex wanted to sue Uponor, Sentex needed to give Uponor notice under Chapter 40. That's what NRS 40.645 and 40.646 and other sections say, that if you're going to sue somebody under Chapter 40, you do have to give them notice. It doesn't mean the party has to do a repair. In fact, eight times out of ten, they don't. But it allowed Uponor to do a repair, which the purpose of doing so is if you do the repair, presumably the homeowners are happy and they're not going to sue you. That's the whole reason for those sections being enacted in 2003. So it's not a duty to give notice to Uponor as much as it is if you want to sue them, you do need to give them notice. Sentex gave them notice, chose for some reason not to sue Uponor, but RCR did. And our position is that once you've been given notice and you have rejected the right to repair, now that was their right to reject the opportunity to perform a repair. They clearly had the right to say, no, we're not a supplier, Chapter 40 doesn't apply, but they took the chance then.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is the implications of the word may in 645.1b. Where the claimant commences an action or amends a complaint to add a cause of action for a constructional defect against a contractor. B, must give written notice to the contractor. B, or A, may, and then under B, may give written notice to the supplier. Seems to me it's discretionary. It's not compelled by the statute.
Correct. It's not compelled. May is permissive. And what as I understand this...
So what is the consequence? If it's discretionary, presumably I don't have to, and I can still proceed with my suit against the supplier.
That's correct.
In this case, the fact that a notice was given that isn't compelled by the statute halted an entire trial.
Altered an entire trial.
Halted.
Halted an entire trial. It did indeed. And it wasn't proper. And there's a huge mischief that is potential here if the court, if this court's order of August 2, 2013 were to be upheld by this court, because there could be opportunities for different parties in different cases. In every case that I know of, third-party defendants file cross-complaints against each other. They always go back against each other. And someone then moves to dismiss that on the basis that that person, that other third-party defendant, hadn't given this one notice before suing them, and therefore the whole case should come to a screeching halt. That's not how this system should work. And clearly, when Openor made that decision, they continued to have all the rights in the world when they made the decision back in 2009 not to perform a repair. People, entities in Chapter 40 cases do that all the time. They elect not to repair.
My understanding of the pleadings in this case is that you and Syntex, you and then Syntex through your assignment, had sued RCR, but you had not sued Openor.
Not initially, correct. Now we have. And now the second amended complaint on file in this case.
Before the judge halted the proceedings and gave some credit to the notice problem and the right to repair question, before that happened, you and Syntex had only sued RCR.
That is, Syntex had sued RCR, had not sued Openor.
And you had sued. Moved. And you hadn't sued either RCR or Openor.
That is also correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I think that wrapped up.
Clock's ticking away for me. I have lots more I'd like to offer, but thank you for your attention.
Well, thank you all. Thank you all for coming up to Carson City. Very interesting issue. We appreciate your excellent arguments and briefs, and we will take this matter under submission. We'll be in recess till 11:30 a.m.